Dave, welcome to Validated.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on today. We also have Amira here from the Solana Foundation, back to co-host.
Hey, always fun to join in. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. This is going to be a fun conversation. I think this is a topic that has been kicking around crypto for a long time, which is the beginning of a conversation around real-world assets, stuff where the value is actually not on the blockchain, the value is stored somewhere else, but we can represent various types of real-world assets on the blockchain. You know, for context, this is actually most of the traditional financial space. Most of TradFi is real-world assets. It's not just purely financial assets. That's everything from bonds and mortgages and corporate debt and these sorts of things to gold, commodities, you know, real estate, all these other areas. And so this is an area that there's been a lot of conversations around over the last few years, but it feels like the tech is kind of just getting there. So I'm excited to talk today about what you guys are building and sort of the evolution of the real world asset space and crypto in general.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. We're excited to be here too and talk about it. You know, it's pretty interesting. I think you said something really like the technology's catching up. I actually feel the technology's been there, but I think the regulatory space is catching up. And that's what's kind of helping people, or maybe the creativeness behind people providing technology in the regulatory space is catching up. So for us, I would say that was the biggest innovation is how we did it safely and securely and legally. So.
Okay, so we have a lot to unpack there. Well, that's exciting to hear. So why don't we start off, why don't you tell us what Etherfuse is? And then we can dig into how sort of the regulatory space has been something you've been able to navigate.
So, you know, I'd be lying to say if our initial strategy was the one we have now. You know, the last 2 years have been pretty brutal for us, just like everybody else. So we've had a pivot with everybody else too. But fundamentally, what Etherfuse is, you know, we were looking to find a way to create a security on chain that could be marketed to the general public. And initially, the idea was let's create like an infrastructure bond for crypto. So what that would be asset or an ownership into a validator for crypto. And the reason we thought about that was, you know, we felt both validators had product market fit, they could make money, it was achievable. And if you go back and look at the history of bonds, like they're very secure, very safe. They're like this interface that helps build nations safely and securely. So can we bring that onto the blockchain? And so marrying those two things, we felt would be a successful venture. We did kind of look into the space here in the United States and realized that it took 10 plus years to get an ETF for Bitcoin approved and just thought, you know, we're probably wasting our time trying to find a legal way to do that here. And so we did some research into where in the world would be a good place for us to do it. And we decided on Mexico. And so that's essentially what Etherfuse is.
And so the original idea there, just kind of to dig in a bit, was that a group of people could get together or you could own sort of shares, for lack of a better term, of like a validator operation, kind of like how you do in like some of the publicly traded Bitcoin mining pool companies.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And at the time, 2 years ago, the cost of a validator was a huge problem. You know, everyone was talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's still an issue, but that was when SOL was 250. So, you know, to even start one up, it's a few million dollars. So that was the idea. Yeah.
And tell us how it evolved from there. What are you offering now?
So we discovered a lot of opportunity, I guess I would say. So it evolved when we went to Mexico and we started talking with their SEC. So they're called the CNBV and their Ministry of Finance, which is like our Federal Reserve. And so we said, hey, we think that the blockchain is going to be super beneficial for Latin America, especially for Mexico. You know, Mexico has a lot of demographic or characteristics that the blockchain solves, like half the country's unbanked, the average cost of a loan is like 40%. You know, people having a lot of phones, phone penetration is really high. So it just felt like the perfect kindling for a fire in Mexico. And so we felt, hey, you know, Mexico is positioned well and probably likely to say yes to things. And so we proposed this idea of doing a bond. And through this back and forth, it's a long process. It can take a long time. We discovered that, hey, we could release tokenized assets too, tokenized bonds and tokenized treasuries and tokenized stocks and tokenized ETFs. And so before, actually, we're We're waiting probably next month for the initial approval for the general public for that infrastructure bond. I'll let you know exactly how that happens. But we have already been given the legal guidelines and parameters by which we can offer bonds and stocks and treasuries and ETFs. So we launched at Breakpoint.
Congrats. And so now someone can go buy a Mexican bond on chain.
Correct. Yeah, Mexican. Or right now we have four bonds. We have two types of Mexican bonds. We have a Reporto, which is a 7-week maturity bond, really, really liquid, about 11% yields. We have a 28-day Mexican CETES, which is 11% yield. We have a U.S. Treasury. So Mexico buys a bunch of U.S. bonds and they'll create liquidity for them. So we have a week maturing bond from the U.S. called a U.S. Reporto. And we also have a T-note from the U.S. that's about a month maturity.
Okay, so there's so much to dig into here, but I think the first thing is why would someone want to buy a tokenized bond through Etherfuse? Who are your customers and what are they hoping to get?
So I view it, you know, we're learning a lot too. So we had all these hypotheses who our customers would be, and we're learning, you know, these new customers we didn't even understand that we have. So, you know, we have a B2B and we have a B2C, but we've had a lot more experimentation with B2C. And I said, to answer your question directly, the reason why someone would want to buy a tokenized bond is they kind of understand their money and they want to invest their money with as minimal middlemen as possible and have as much yield on their money as they can. So that would be the biggest reason we're seeing. So we're seeing folks from all over the world. I think we have 32 countries that are buying stable bonds, what we call them, from us. And I think it's just people wanting to have a safe asset like a stable coin, but also earn interest without converting it to fiat first.
And what would you have to do without Etherfuse to be able to have access to that debt?
Yeah. So if you just, I'll give you a hypothetical. Say you were a Nigerian and you wanted to have access to the Mexican ecosystem. You wanted to buy a CETES, which is a triple B plus bond, super safe, super secure, performs very well. You would have to have upwards of $300,000 to $500,000. You'd have to establish an account in Mexico, somehow partner with a brokerage, and then start buying some bonds. So it's the ability for you to do that is almost impossible. Now with Etherfuse, it takes, I think, 5 minutes or less to KYC. And then once you're KYC, it takes about 30 seconds to buy a bond.
I don't mean to be crude here, but is the thing that you've really cracked regulatory arbitrage? Like you've gone to the Mexican government and you've been able to say, hey, we do this thing on blockchain, and therefore you should sort of set up your processes for people who buy government bonds differently?
Yeah. So I think, I don't know if it's crude, but do we somehow go to Mexico as a regulatory escape? Maybe that's a way to think about it, but it's more just the way I see it is we found a regulatory friendly place for us to do something that's going to benefit the world. That's how I kind of look at it. If that answers your question.
I guess to put a finer point on it, why would the Mexican government not just make the process of bond issuance easier in the traditional TradFi world?
That's a good question. They should, for sure. And I think that in part they are by working with us, you know. I also think, before this, I started a company called NeuralPay in the United States. So we did P2P payments and banking. So the bloat that is involved in payments is not only you can't only be found in Mexico, you know, it's also in the United States. So the people involved in one person paying another in between is insane, even in the United States, you know. So I think that there's so many layers and so much history and so much, I would say, tech debt in modern finance that it's hard to unwind. And so why can't Mexico just make things super simple? I think, you know, you have bureaucracy involved, you have history involved, you have people who own companies involved. And so I think it's just very difficult. There's an awesome book about this called The Mystery of Capital, if you have a chance to read it. It specifically talks about Latin America having this problem specifically with bureaucracy. And his hypothesis is essentially if you could create one unique way or one standard template to do things, that you could unlock billions and trillions of capital in Latin America. So I know that doesn't answer your question directly, but the answer is because that's how it is. And that's politics, which you know more than me about. And it's hard to unwind the past. And it's easier sometimes just to take a 1,000-yard leap forward and use a new technology.
Yeah, this is like interesting because it's sort of what you talked about before about how like Mexico has really great cell phone networks, but maybe not as good hardline networks. And so there is some willingness to experiment with new technologies. Talk a little bit about how you initially got connected with the Mexican government, what that application process was like. Like, what's your relationship to Mexico also? Like, how did this all come about?
Well, before I get lost in this story, I will say if anyone is interested in establishing in Mexico, even if you're competing directly with me, let me know and I'll give you, I think we owe it to the place to help bring good people in. So let me know and I'll help connect you with the right people. Before this, I partnered up to build a startup studio with a friend of mine. His name's Isaac Saldana. He was the founder of a company called SendGrid. They did very, very well. So he's a Hispanic icon, you know? And so we together would go to Mexico and we would kind of give talks. And so I was like the CTO of the startup studio. And so I learned a lot by just kind of being with him and meeting people. We'd meet politicians and stuff like that. We would hire out of Mexico. So when I started Etherfuse, we didn't intend to go to Mexico. We just kind of looked at the world and said, hey, what's a big economy that's going to be open? You know, you have like China, India, Mexico, all kind of good opportunities, you know, and we just felt Mexico's probably going to be the most open to me, a foreigner coming in and saying, hey, can we do this here? And being open to it. And so I already had some of those connections. So we reached out. And so our CEO, David Adujo, right now, he was someone I met through Isaac and he joined and we just started going. So, and
you're like skipping past the middle. Like when you say you already had the connections, like, what do you mean? Who did you call? How does one just go up to the Mexican government and ask them to start tokenizing bonds?
So the way you do it now is just send me a telegram and I'll point you. So our legal team, Legal Paradox, they're partners of ours now. I would say they're the most well-versed in crypto in Mexico and they are awesome. So if I was starting out with no knowledge, that's where I would go. Now, for me, I did have a little bit of connections there because we had hired out through our startup studio a lot of engineers. And so we had met a lot of politicians who wanted to develop the country and create incentives to bring people there. So I had already had those connections. And so I leaned upon those. And part of those connections were just my experience with my friend Isaac, who we'd built other companies with. So in a way, I did have a little bit of a strategic advantage there that most people wouldn't have, but I will give that strategic advantage to any team who wants to come and start working in Mexico and just reach out to me. I'll let you have it.
That's very kind of you to give away your advantage. So, all right. So you get on the phone with some of these Mexican politicians and what is the pitch and how do you go from like, I have this idea to them letting you take this plunge in a matter of like less than 2 years, right? Like it's pretty short turnaround by government scope.
Yeah, we will publish a paper probably in a year. The way we did it is there's this law in Mexico called, I don't know what it's called, but it's like a sandbox law. And it's something that the U.S. should have. Basically what it is, it says if there's a rapid adoption of technology and it's not understood how it's going to affect the economy or finance or something, you can apply to enter a sandbox where you articulate what your product is. And then the government says, you know what, this could be good for our country. So let's deploy it together. And so you're working in a highly supervised regulatory sandbox to launch these products. And so that's what we started. So we started this process for approval to enter the sandbox for that initial infrastructure bond I talked to you about. Now, the good news is, the bad news is, you said really quick, 2 years. To me, that's felt like a lifetime, you know, for a startup, that's almost a death sentence. You know, we've survived by being just by having that dog in us. But, you know, that's a long, long time. And so through that process, there's been a lot of back and forth where we've met. And we said, this is how the blockchain works. This is how it works. And they've said, we don't think that's a security. We think this, like we defined our security model, which is self-custody, but secure at point of payment. So that's why our bonds are transferable. You can use them in DeFi, which we think is a huge innovation for bonds. Nobody's doing right now, you know, but So we kind of define these things, and then their response, whether, hey, that will work or not, let us give us more insight to other things that we could do. So there's not like a clear process, Amira. It's more like, let's approach the sandbox model, let's have an idea, and then we learn a lot. So right now, I would say it's asymmetric information that we have about what's legal and what's not. We hope to publish that all so that everyone could take advantage of it when we're done, but we're getting there.
So some of the stuff I'm kind of curious about as you talk about this, you mentioned these things are actually tradable and usable in DeFi. Walk us through a little bit of like from a tech standpoint. Obviously, every bond has a different duration period, a different interest rate. There's a lot of variables that go into defining what this is. Are these represented as NFTs, SFTs? Like, what does it look like in my wallet if I go to you and buy one of these?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it depends. Every bond starts out as an SPL token, but we do leave a way for, and we started building this before Token 22 came out. So, you know, we couldn't benefit from a lot of that yeah. already existed. So there's two main type of sovereign bonds. One is zero coupon. There's a lot, but I'll sound dumb to anyone who's a bond trader for the sake of clarity. Zero coupon. So you give some money and then at time of maturity, it's worth more, that plus more back. And then there's also like, periodic interest paying tokens. So we allow both. So every token starts out as an SPL token, but if you wanted to buy like a 10-year bond and you wanted to put $10 million in and you wanted to live off the interest, you can convert it to an NFT. So it's no longer fungible. It's non-fungible.
Got it.
And so you can collect the interest while still keeping the claim on the par value. And so we think that's pretty cool. And we'll release more products like that soon. We're right now just testing short-term because I don't think we built the trust needed yet to have someone invest $10 million of their personal finances in us yet. But we'll get there and you'll see more of those NFTs in the near future.
Yeah, you mentioned it's about, what, $300,000, $400,000 for someone to go the traditional route. What's the sort of entry price you've been able to bring that down to using blockchain?
$1. So we use it's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. So 5 minutes and $1. So you can, I think when I did some research, like the average wallet size was 4 SOL. So you could take your full 4 SOL, convert it to USDC and invest that into bonds if you want to just kind of check out of the up and down game of crypto. And we have a place for you. We have an opportunity for you to do that.
That's pretty dramatic cost savings. And do you have a sense, I guess, if the average wallet is 4 SOL, you know, you mentioned folks are in 32 countries all over the world. Do you have a sense of who these buyers are and how they're finding Etherfuse?
Right now, they're finding us through our, I'd say, growth hacking, because we have two routes right now. We have B2B, B2C. B2C, we are kind of leveraging the networks that Solana's already built through Superteam, DAO, and through Solana All-Stars. So this is kind of our secret sauce compared to our competitors, is we're really close with the Solana ecosystem. So we go to those events, we sponsor those events, and it's kind of spreading out that way. I think we have 10 to 20,000 token holders right now, so it's been pretty productive. Pretty excited about that. But I could give you a breakdown of the countries, but I don't know if they're surprising, but they're kind of like what you'd expect. They're emerging markets where the currency is not super stable. And people are just looking to have some savings account. And so we're seeing a lot of that. You also are seeing like the bigger holders be from places you would expect, looking to get 10% yield, which was not, well, there's two users we weren't expecting that we're seeing. People with a lot of money wanting to buy Mexican bonds, which probably could if they wanted to go the whole route, but they find this is easier. And we're also seeing a lot of Mexicans actually buy CEDES through us for interesting reasons that we wouldn't have expected to, because they have access to them privately through their like treasury direct, CETES Directo.
Right.
And that was pretty interesting for us to learn.
I'm kind of curious both on two sides, and sort of one of this is like US treasuries are what, somewhere in the 4 to 5.5% now. So are you seeing most of this actually be, because you mentioned you offer some US debt products as well as, you know, Mexican bond products.
Yeah.
What's the breakdown between those two? And I'm just sort of, it's kind of interesting to think about, like, for many places in the world, Mexico is actually a very safe, stable currency and political environment. I think in the United States, we often view Mexico as a less safe and less stable system. So like, talk to me a little bit about the dynamics you're seeing in terms of where people are buying and sort of how they're buying and like, what's the composite picture of that look like today?
Yeah, I'll explain some things that surprised us too. Yeah. At the same time, I'll say this: B2B. So we think a lot of app developers are going to take our SDK and build savings accounts and IROs and 401ks on top of us. And I think in the next 18 months we'll have thousands of different bonds.
Nice. So
we see B2B buying a lot. We still think those folks are going to want the stability of the U.S. dollar. Like we have a big centralized exchange in Latin America who has made an order for a lot of bonds in the U.S. dollar. But what we're seeing is almost 100-to-1 of people choosing high yield emerging market bonds. So we have Brazilian and Mexican, you know, that surprised me. I thought, okay, once we launch this U.S. Treasury, everybody's going to be like, wow, you did it, you know.
Right. We can finally get U.S. dollar exposure in Brazil.
Exactly. I thought that's what we would see. But, you know, maybe it wasn't surprising. BBB+ bonds are pretty safe, you know, for the rest of the world. And that's safer than 99% of anything on the blockchain. And so people are almost 99-to-1 choosing just to buy Mexican reportos, which I would not have anticipated. And wow. I'm probably giving a little secret away to anyone who's creating a comparable project to us. A lot of people are going for the U.S. Treasury, and we're seeing more demand in other places, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it hints at a future of like, if you're going to target an audience that I guess is inherently more risk-seeking, you know, there's going to be tolerance for products that feel riskier than U.S. Treasuries, but are actually much safer than a lot of what you find in DeFi.
Yeah. You know, there was just an announcement by an awesome person who has an awesome product, but they said, we're going to create the highest yield-bearing stablecoin. You guys are probably aware of it. I'm not trying to make fun of anybody. But I think they're doing great, but I think it was like 8%. Like, dude, Mexican reportos are 11%. Like, they're already out there. Like, they're safer than whatever lending protocol, you know, it's guaranteed almost, you know, so I don't think Mexico's going to want to mess or damage their Fitch and Moody rating. So going to be hard to beat for sure.
That's fascinating.
Can we talk a little bit more about sort of the B2B angle? So what are you finding in terms of, you know, are there institutions that are interested in buying these bonds, or are they already using sort of the traditional channels to do so? How's that mapping out compared to expectations?
No, I've been surprised. People want to use our SDK. I think a lot of people, you know, there's other regulatory environments. Like we have, because I don't have permission, I'm not going to say names, but I'm going to describe the tech. Okay. There are people who went to El Salvador and have broad tokenization ability, but El Salvador doesn't have the economy of Mexico, you know, the amount of bonds and things. So they're using our SDK just to offer our supply, you know, so that's a big example. We also have stablecoin issuers. So like Paxos, I would say, who want to create like branded stablecoins. Well, now they can create stablecoins in different currencies if they just integrate with our SDK. So you can create a peso stablecoin without needing to interact with the Federal Reserve of Mexico. You can just hook up to our SDK.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And so every new country we end up in, they'll be able to integrate with us and create a Brazilian currency, a Swiss currency, you know, as we start to add more products, you know, because they can peg that asset with our currencies. We also offer a currency API where you can just have a cache of cash, essentially, where you could give us crypto and we hold that currency in one of our bank accounts that have that currency. So we're seeing that. We're also seeing centralized exchanges in places with more broad applicability, like hypothetically in Dubai, you could have a centralized exchange and offer our tokens that we recognize as securities and you'd be okay. So we're seeing those too. The biggest one that we're working with, and I can talk about these guys because I love them and I know they don't care, but Decaf is a wallet. So a Latin American wallet. If they wanted to create liquidity and create a pool, they could create savings accounts for everyone who has a stable coin on their wallet. And that's a huge kind of feature that doesn't really exist that they're going to provide to all their users. So we have other wallets too, but I know Decaf would not care if I talk about them. So
you have two sets of products, right? You have like one, which is basically the bond, which is offered on both, I think, like a retail and business basis, but then also you have the suite of tech products that allow people to take what you've done on tokenization and be able to apply that to a suite of other real world assets out there. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I view it as we still only really provide the core product, but the tech or the new innovations people build for us. So if you think about it, the modern financial world is built on bonds, bank accounts, like everything that we do for the most part is built on bonds. So now anything in crypto can take our API and build, copy anything in the financial world using only crypto. So I don't know if I'd say it's two financial products. It's we have bonds that retail can go directly to our app for, or we have an SDK that you can do a, you can KYB with us and you can create your own products using our bonds.
Got it. And what about institutional buyers for your bonds, like the Mexican Recetes or probably those, right? Those are the ones that are pretty interesting. Have you found just financial institutions outside of the US or maybe outside Mexico that are interested in purchasing?
Yeah, we are in due diligence with a very big bank that wants to tokenize their securities for all their customers. We'll probably announce this in a month or so, so I won't talk about it right now. But this is a bank that's really prevalent in Latin America, all across Europe, and even in the States, but has hundreds of millions of users and realizes that a lot of their users would have broad access in emerging markets. So we're on the later stages there. We also have a US company that, so we're watching this McHenry bill, and we think that it's pretty hopeful. And stable bonds has been, the protocol has been developed very closely to adhere to the words described in the McHenry bill. So once that kind of passes and we feel like we are in good shape, we will partner with a company we're really close with in the US, which has a lot of relationships with credit unions, and we'll deploy those there. And that's going to be mostly to facilitate cross-border payments. There's a lot of these credit unions want to compete with these bigger banks, and they need kind of more firepower. And so they think cross-border payments will be, cheap cross-border payments will be a way to do that.
Oh, man, throwback to the McHenry bills.
We'll see what happens.
We'll talk all about the McHenry bill at some point, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll take that offline, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. I don't know what's going to happen. We're watching it. But for now, we're focusing outward, and hopefully we get somewhere where we can come back home.
Yeah.
I'd say it's smart at least to get a sense of what the language is in there so that you you sort of understand where things are going.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to, you mentioned expansion to other countries and jurisdictions. What does that look like? Is that like a very manual, let's start from zero again and, you know, try and worm our way up to the right people in government? Or like, is the Mexican government like helping with introductions to other people now? Like, because this is sort of the classic thing that you always hear is like, it's amazing that you've got one government on board. There's 170 more and now you got to go talk to.
Yeah, it doesn't scale. It's linear scale. Yeah. So, but there are some advantages to being established in a positive regulatory environment that helps you enter a new country. So, and let me explain. So Tether is a good example. You know, I would say the US does not love Tether, but Tether is allowed to be deployed across the world and by US treasuries. Mm. So, but they don't have like a presence in the US, you know? So I would say they're a global company with no real regulatory clearance anywhere, you know? So they have something in some small place, I don't know. So for us, like, for example, we're moving into Switzerland too right now. It would be hard for me to go from nothing to Switzerland. But if I have a corporation that's established with documentation and legal work that says I'm allowed to do the things that I'm intending to do in Mexico, I'm able to set up accounts in Switzerland and Spain. We have Switzerland, Spain, Dubai going on right now. So it makes it a little bit easier, but it still takes time for sure. Switzerland, going in the front door of Switzerland would almost be impossible mm-hmm. for an American, but for us to come in through an entity legally, I'm not doing any tricks. We're reporting this all. Yeah. We're very legal and transparent what we're doing, but it's possible. So it's still linear. Like, we're never going to get 50 countries overnight, but it's easier for us to take what we have and start working in a different country.
Because you're listening to this podcast, I'm assuming you're interested in staying on top of the latest trends, news, and more. So I want to tell you about another show. It's called Web3 with A6NC Crypto, but is really about the future of the internet, future of creators, future of business, future of the way we work and live. It's for anyone seeking to understand the latest tech trends direct from experts with high insights per minute, given your time and attention are so valuable. Follow Web3 with A6Z in your podcast app now.
So what's the sort of underlying business model for this? Are you guys basically saying, like, look, people resell bonds all the time. Because we're using blockchain, we can do this slightly more efficiently, and so we can offer better yield and maybe still have the same profit margin? Or are you guys just in the growth stage and not really worried about that yet?
No, we're always worried about it. Because we're in the growth stage. But we're also, you know, fundraising and things like that. And so we have to be able to articulate our strategy. I'd say there are two ways that we earn money. But before that, I will just say this. So I think if you can look at a company that has 20 people and has a market cap of a fourth of JP Morgan Chase, you know that there is an inefficiency for the consumer there. And so if you look at the way stablecoins are today, it's pretty obvious that there's room for the consumer to squeeze value. And so right now you have a small set of people capturing a lot of value from commerce from the rest of the world. So we think bonds enable us to create products that compete with these, but spread the value out to these countries, to all over the, to, so wherever the commerce is happening, the value can be there. So the way that we would make money is a percentage of yield. So it's a fluctuating fee. So if it's a bond that yields like 4.5%, we cap it at a quarter of a percent of a fee. And if it's a bond that's 10 plus, we'll go up to 1.5%. This is still cheaper than any fee that you would pay buying it in a traditional way, where, you know, cost to purchase and things like that.
Yeah.
The other way we're going about it is we will start to create like a money market, kind of like Robinhood.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do the Web3 version, where the purchase and payments of our tokens will be in a currency that we create. We're getting there. We're not there yet. And so we will earn the yields off of that money market that we create too.
And this would be a like a U.S. currency stablecoin, effectively, or
it
just
would,
a real
it would
crypto
be,
asset?
It would be multiple tokens,
right.
But the token would always be denominated in the currency of the bond.
Okay. So you'd have like Ether USD, which I think will confuse a lot of people if that's actually your ticker.
We're going to call it USDE.
Yeah.
Or if it's MXNE.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so that'll be the pattern.
Awesome.
For sure.
Can we take a small deviation and just talk about why you built a company named Etherfuse on Solana?
Yeah.
Amira asking the hard questions.
No, it is.
I just gotta
know.
It's
a good question. It's funny because I think one of the biggest breaks we got was, you know, Anna invited us to dinner at Breakpoint in Portugal. And I sat next to Raj, just like random. It was like our first month in the startup. And he's like, oh, what do you do? Like, what do you do on Ethereum? I'm like, no, we're on Solana. And his mind was blown just because Etherfuse, you know? And so he actually put his phone number in my phone. I think he was so excited, you know? I haven't texted him more than twice, just to let you know. But it's not the best story. But so part of starting a company like this, a lot of it just depends on like your willingness to get up and keep trying as a founder from 0 to 1 stage, right? So Etherfuse was a domain name I bought 13 years ago when I was at Apple. And I was always thinking, I was kind of like, you know, I'm not fulfilling my potential. I need to step out and start something. And so I bought it. I was actually creating like a router that sat plugged into your router and would capture all your internet traffic and tell you what's going on in your house. And then Disney came out with something called Circle, and that dream was shattered, you know? So like every year when the name came up with GoDaddy, it was always like this like painful reminder, like you're not following your heart, you know, and you're not doing what you need to do. And so I know it didn't make sense, but it made sense to me to call it Etherfuse, because it was like, this is it. Put everything you have into this and make it happen. And we didn't intend particularly to go on Solana. We were just like, what should we go? And we realized that Solana would be the best place. And I think we've been proven right. So far. But Etherfuse has a lot of meaning to me, and it helps me kind of fight through these like hard years where Solana goes to 8, or FTX looks like it's going to crash my company, or Luna crashes, or, you know, it's kind of something that just keeps me going, like, let's make this happen. And that's the unintelligent story. It's just, it's a motivator for me and my co-founder.
Well, I'm really glad you didn't call it Soul Fuse.
Yeah, that was taken, right? So it's still a good name. It's just some other guy made a blockchain named close to it after I bought the domain. So
love it.
Well, it's a beautiful story.
I'm really curious, kind of the SDK model that you've described, the sort of expansion onto other countries. This is all predicated on a bunch of technology. One of these things is KYC that you're talking about. I think KYC is a little bit of a dirty word in blockchain. And I think part of maturing is products like yours saying we're going to use blockchain, but also build compliance in these systems. How does that interface with the whole trading side? And this is, as you alluded before, Token Extensions has a lot of features to sort of address this. But you guys are not yet building on Token Extensions. So how have you sort of managed to meet the ownership reporting requirements while also having a token that can be traded?
So we had to teach our regulators. And so we used the standard of a stablecoin and said, we can be as secure as a stablecoin. And so if you look at USDC, maybe Tether, I'm not sure, but if you want to mint and burn USDC, you do have to go through KYC.
Yeah.
And you do have to report who you are. And so that's exactly the same as us. Anyone who mints and burns can go and create liquidity and put a pool out there on DeFi, and trading can happen without KYC. And so we basically use that as a comparison. We said, look, stablecoins are huge for Latin America. People are using them like crazy. The value you've brought to your people is going to be huge. And if we can create less or equal friction to a stablecoin, then we think we can bring a lot of value to your country. So that's how we did it. You're right, people do get pretty frustrated. We will literally give someone a dollar and be like, hey, just try it out. And they'll be like, mad at me. Why didn't you tell me? I'm like, okay. I don't want to say, but I don't want to go to jail. And we're doing our best. And these are real bonds. And that's why the yield's so high. So there is a friction point. I think people are going to have to get used to it. I don't think it's changing existing users' minds. I think it's bringing on new users. That's our goal. The people are we look at us, this is going to sound dumb, but we look at Etherfuse today as like Amazon as a bookstore in 1999. Bonds are a commodity. They have all this success. We know that there's a lot of people who could do it, but we're going to be the first to pioneer it. And we're going to create the protocol and the tools and the trust to deploy bonds upon the blockchain. And the world's going to catch up and growth's going to come. It's not there yet, but it'll be there. So that's how we look at ourselves. And so the world will grow up and the world will understand that KYC is needed. And it is what it is.
And so the overall KYC model applies to not necessarily retail investors, but folks who want to be liquidity providers.
Even retail, if they come directly to us, they have to KYC. But we think, as we grow, most people will get tokens from other people, from people who KYC. So centralized exchanges, they'll KYC through, let's use USDC as an example, to provide stablecoins to their users.
Right.
And they can, I as a Coinbase user, can go in and buy a USDC without doing anything, So we think that'll happen too.
So just to round it out, I'm curious, this is what you're building is a pretty interesting example of what real world assets could look like actually executed. And I think there's a lot of pontificating out there about the future of RWAs. And I'm curious, based on what you've learned so far, what have you figured out is worth tokenizing and what's not worth tokenizing? And then help me map that against where the hype is versus where there's not as much hype.
I don't want to offend people, but I think this is what I think.
We're here to offend.
Okay. I think most of the world is going in the wrong direction and we're going in the right direction. And I think most of people, investors included, think that we're going in the wrong direction and the world's going in the right direction. So we'll see who's right, but I think we're right. So the way I would think about it, I think a lot of people look at RWAs as tokenizing a asset. And so they spend all this time in an environment that makes you get regulatory clearance for one thing. Yeah. And I think that is a mistake. Where we look at us as a protocol of any asset. And so when we go through the regulatory process, we say, hey, assets exist. This is how we would protocolize them. We don't manage anything. A lot of people are managing like a basket of goods on behalf of people. And I think that's a huge mistake because now you're in the middle, right? And so we are just a wrapper of an asset and we don't make any decisions for the user. And because we've made it that way, we are able to like go through the regulatory process as like a tokenization of anything. So I'm not selling you this sketchy asset or this good asset. I'm selling you anything you can. So within 6 months, we will have the complete stock exchange of Mexico tokenized. And we will be able to tap into the liquidity there. And you can buy and sell whenever you want. And we'll be able to leverage the Mexican economy.
It's funny because this reminds me of the original vision of Visa. Very close.
Yeah. Yeah. We're very ambitious. We think that we can do this. We know it's crazy, but I think we were all in the stage of our careers where we wanted to do something crazy. But it's definitely possible. And so a lot of people are going to Dubai, as an example, to do tokenization, right? But Dubai has five regulators, and they're all fighting over jurisdiction. And then for every token you create, you got to go through a regulatory process. And so I think we get a lot of people, you know, when we're saying, what are you doing there? Well, why don't you go somewhere else? You know, why don't you go to Switzerland? And the reason why is we really needed an environment that would work with us on the tokenization of any asset. And so when we start to release products like crazy here in the next 6 months, it'll start to make sense. But I think until then, we'll kind of look silly, but we're okay to look, we're happy to look silly in the meantime.
Awesome. Well, if folks are interested in learning more, in figuring out what's available for them in their jurisdiction, where can they learn more about Etherfuse?
You can come to our website and you can look at our stable bond marketplace. You can also sign up to our allow list, allowlist.etherfuse.com. And that is the gateway to everything. We'll teach you, we'll give you all information, but just check out our website, etherfuse.com. Check out our app, app.etherfuse.com, and look what our users are doing. And see if it's beneficial for you.
Great. Well, Dave, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I think this conversation went in a totally different direction than at least I thought we were going to originally talking about. I thought this is going to be a nice institutional, semi-interesting conversation on bonds and the future of RWAs. And I am very inspired for the SDK-based future of tokenizing everything.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And let us know if we can do anything else. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks. Validated is produced by Ray Belli with help from Ross Cohen, Brandon Echter, Amira Valiani, and Ainsley Medford. Engineering by Tyler Morissette.